Hey, Damashek here. Make sure you check out the new episode of the Dave Damashek Football Program. Maurice Jones-Drew and fantasy guru Matt Harmon are breaking down the best and worst triplets in all the NFL. Plus, we start digging in on fantasy. We're talking Todd Gurley, the Raiders, the Packers, and beyond. Check it all out on iTunes or NFL.com/podcast.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. This is James Coe, joined alongside my family here, the podcast family. MG, aww, my guy Marcus Grant, what's up, man?
What's going on, James?
The magical beard of fantasy, the franchise, what's going on?
Hey, James, what's up?
The whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gailhar, what's cracking?
A little bit of a late start because of my schedule over here. Apologize for that, gang, but we're in now. We're together.
He is hashtag important.
The funniest part about that, too, is that the podcast listener would have no idea. They're going to download it whenever they're going
to. Well, hey, I mean, it might come up like 15 minutes later on their feed after I edit it and publish it and stuff. So then they're like, what the heck's happening? So
why is it 15 minutes late? I need this podcast.
If you're stuck at work and you were waiting for the pod, I apologize. It's my fault.
Okay, there you go. And it is. I'm going with this now. We've got it now, okay? It's the wide receiver prognosticator, Matt Harmon.
That sounds terrible.
Why is that terrible?
You don't like whisperer?
No. I can't say it, so yeah. We're not going with it. So we're going with the wideout prognosticator, Matthew Harmon.
I don't really care what you call me. It's fine. You can call me whatever you want.
All right.
You already call me an idiot on TV.
We call you lots of things.
anything is a step up from idiot.
Awesome. Okay.
Matt Harmon, who's an idiot.
There you go.
Oh.
It lives. It lives. Then great. We will call you West Virginia's finest.
Whatever. At this point, I can't. I just got to start sailing into the current.
We continue our divisional breakdown of every division here in the NFL from a fantasy perspective. This episode we shall talk about the AFC West Broncos, Raiders, Chiefs, and Chargers. And the much highly anticipated Fan League update. We're going to give you an early entrant. Right.
One to each league.
The OG League. The Bearded League.
Have we decided, is that what we're calling it, Marcus, since we did this last year?
I think so.
The OG League?
I think you should call it the OG. The OG League is... Yeah, that's strong.
Okay.
That is strong.
The OG League.
The Bearded League, featuring the franchise and West Virginia's finest, as well as the Danger Zone League.
Danger Zone!
With myself and Adam Rank, so it's going to be good. So I'm looking forward to that. But let's get this thing kicking off, man. Let's talk top news.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news. Because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
You know, I do need to update this, don't I? I feel like we've run its course on this guy.
No, I love this drop.
Yeah?
Man. I mean, just maybe add some more.
I'm with James. I'm over it.
Okay. All right.
You would be.
What does that even mean?
You know what it means.
Top headline out of Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott missing time with it. Apparently, there's one working hamstring in the entire NFL.
Yep.
And it belongs to Arian Foster, oddly enough.
No! That's on borrowed time, my friend. All right, Ezekiel Elliott missing time with a hamstring. What does it mean? How much are we freaking out?
0%.
Oh, really. I'm not hitting the panic
button at all.
I'm drafting Alfred Morris now.
Isn't he? Oh, my God. Really?
First of all, what? I mean, I was thinking about this on the way in. You know, Devontae Freeman was the number one scoring running back in fantasy last year, and he's like just been tossed aside to like deep late second round status, right?
Weren't you the one that tossed him there?
I drove that train. Yes, I did indeed. But has anyone been tossed aside further than Darren McFadden, a man who generated 1,400 yards last year, and we're just saying nope.
So what I think is funny is that, you know, Darren McFadden had a good year last year.
He did.
And people thought, okay, I don't think anybody was overly hyped on him, but they thought, okay, maybe he can be, you know, a nice stopgap for my fantasy roster.
All right.
Then they signed Alfred Morris, and you're like, Then they got Ezekiel Elliott. And it was like, well, adios. That was it. So
yeah, it's interesting, too, because, you know, the handcuff situation behind Zeke is I don't think it's that clear. Darren McFadden there, obviously he had, I think, an offseason injury. Shocking, I know.
Yeah.
And then, as franchise mentioned, Alfred Morris is there as well. So, you know, again, it's way too early to be freaking out about it. But anytime a rookie is going to miss time getting acclimated to the NFL game, that's not good. And so we'll keep an eye on it, obviously. All right, how about Matt Forte? This is, I think, a lot more concerning.
Mm-hmm.
The coaching staff saying he's going to miss the first preseason game, maybe more. And again, he also has some kind of hamstring issue. So I don't know. What do we make of this? Obviously, he's getting a little bit older. It's not like he's, you know, way over the hill. And, you know, when you think about Matt Forte, he's only missed 8 games over his last 8 seasons. So he's incredibly durable.
Iron Man.
I don't necessarily know that he needs the preseason game work. As a matter of fact, right. I know he doesn't.
Well, yeah, but he's in a new offense. So
that's what it is.
That's
what it is.
Yeah.
So what do we make of this news?
Well, I mean, what worries me, it's not the injury. It's not even really the new offense so much. It's this talk that he and Bilal Powell could end up with a fairly even split in the backfield. That is what concerns me.
Pretty definitive talk, too. Like, that's been the tone all offseason. And I know we talked about the NFC South last podcast, which feels like 1,000 years ago.
3 days ago.
God, that feels like a long time ago. I don't know. but, you know, I talked about Charles Sims as one of my favorite picks in the draft because if the starter were to get hurt, he would assume not only all the receiving workload but all the rushing workload. Bilal Powell's kind of like the same proposition, you know, in the double-digit rounds.
Right.
I actually – Manish Mehta, the beat reporter for New York Daily News for the Jets.
Yep.
He told me about a month ago on Twitter.
Wow, sources.
I asked him,
humble brag.
Does he think Powell could be a 3-down guy if Forte were to go down?
All right.
And he said no. In that case, they'd go with Powell and Kyrie Robinson because Powell tends to get nicked up too. So I don't know if Powell has the 3-down abilities that we might expect he would if Forte went down. But I think he's still a value pick because they're expecting major touches and a split workload there. So
I feel like Kyrie Robinson has been a handcuff for about 14 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
Career backup. He's just had such bad luck with injuries, too.
Right. All right. All right. Anything else to make of that news?
I mean, just
keep an eye on it. That's for sure.
Take Powell late. He's a good bargain pick.
Wouldn't touch Forte at his current asking price.
What is it right now? Is it still round 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's late round 3, fourth at best.
So sheesh. High.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
That scares me.
Yep. Alshon Jeffrey, also missing time with a hamstring.
This is why we can't have nice things.
No.
Just, you know, I mean, because I want to be excited about Alshon.
And my gosh, I want to be so excited.
And I'm not suggesting that this means you run screaming from Alshon Jeffrey, but it is that little reminder of why everybody is cautious about him. Why, you know, when you sit there and you are – you know, in the late second, early third round, why you may hesitate on him because, you know, last year it was waiting and waiting and waiting for him to come back and waiting for him to be healthy. And I just, you know, nobody wants to go through that for a guy that is potentially a wide receiver one.
But John Fox is so clear about injuries all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he will let you know.
Clear as mud.
Yeah, right?
He's the worst. The thing with Alshon, and it's so sad, too, because I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, man. I'm like, have we ranked Alshon Jeffrey too low? I was watching game tape of Alshon Jeffrey. You look at some of the game logs for Alshon Jeffrey, and you're like, this guy's a beast.
He's so good.
If he plays 16, it's like 1,800 and 15 are totally doable for his talent level, man. But, no, you're right. The injury concerns, I mean, they're there.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're right. I feel sad. Because he is, when he's on the field, I mean, truly a special player. But I don't know, man. We're going to have to keep a close eye on the hamstring, and we'll see what's up. Jordan Matthews, injured at practice, severity unknown.
That just happened this morning.
That literally
just
happened this morning.
Yeah.
I thought I saw later on that he's quote-unquote fine.
Okay.
Not that that's very clear at all. But yeah, Jordan Matthews appears fine.
Oh, great.
Well, he doesn't necessarily have an injury history either, so I'm not too worried about
just
it. Well,
expected to be sore for a couple of days.
I guess my question more for Jordan Matthews is where does he fit in this offense? Because we're not exactly sure yet, right? Like, he's been described generally as a big slot guy. Does the slot get a lot of work in this Doug Peterson offense?
So from
do we know yet?
this comes from Neil Hornsby, the founder of PFF, like not including pace related, because obviously the Eagles under Chip Kelly played a ton of snaps,
right?
And that volume inflated the offense. Not including that, just on if he only plays as a slot receiver, if he doesn't play on the outside,
yeah,
he's set to lose over 200 snaps if he only plays in the slot. Now, I think he would still. I think he would still play as the flanker on the outside.
Yeah, that doesn't make make any sense.
I don't think he would just exclusively be a slot receiver, but that's just because the Chiefs under Doug Peterson pretty strictly ran two wide receivers, not three out there on most of the snaps.
Well, he's running. I mean, he's going to be one of the two receivers out there.
I would think so, but we don't know that he can beat man coverage on the outside at the NFL level. He's run over 90% of his routes in the last 2 years from the slot. The only one with more, I think, last year was Randall Cobb.
I would imagine, though. I mean, again, I've never seen – I don't make it a habit to watch Vanderbilt games, but I would imagine someone of his talent level played on the outside at Vanderbilt. I would imagine. I mean, he's got to know how to play out there, no?
They weren't reports earlier this year that they tried him outside and then shifted him right back to the slot because he didn't have the makeup out there to beat that press man coverage.
Yeah, so I think it was Doug Peterson basically said, "Yeah, we're going to try him outside," and then even in mini camps, not even in training camps, he goes, "Yeah, he's more of a slot receiver."
Oops. Okay. What's his draft price right now?
He is currently on NFL.com. Wow.
Marcus looks this up. Honestly,
I'm still scrolling.
I'm really not in on Jordan Matthews.
I know, me neither. That's kind of the point I was making, right? Like,
even if he's going in, like, the, I don't know, seventh to eighth range.
He's a sixth round on Fantasy Football Calculator.
Yeah, NFL.com,
he is a tenth round guy.
Wow.
Good for our fans, I guess. Insane. I don't know. I would rather take a shot on those middle rounds on a guy like Tyler Lockett or Marvin Jones or some of these other guys we've uttered on here.
Oh, yeah.
Someone with more upside.
Well, and there's, like we mentioned, whether or not he loses those 200 snaps, there is a risk that his role is going to change a fair amount. And, you know, his stats were inflated last year by a bunch of garbage time at the end of the year, too.
Yeah,
so 100%.
Right.
If it drops down or he doesn't have nearly as big of a target share in that Philadelphia offense, which has a ton of questions under center, everything's coming up. I'm just staying away.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're right. I think they've got quarterback question marks. Again, I don't know if they actually did anything to help improve the offense in any significant way. And it's not like they ran. It's not like they were a good offense last year. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
right. No, I agree. I think his current price tag. I don't know, man. I'm like looking around. He's one of those guys where I just. No matter where he falls, I just find myself not drafting him.
Yeah, draft around him.
Our pal Rumford Johnny calls a crawl space player. Like, their ceiling and floor are so close together.
That's a great term for that.
But I'd rather take a shot on Nelson Agholor late, who I just heard about this morning.
There you go.
I'm back in on Agholor.
The other thing is Sam Bradford is the quarterback there. So
yeah, that's a thing. For now. He's a quarterback for now.
Hey, they've
too.
Got Chase Montana waiting in the wings.
Beautiful. In Miami, Devontae Parker tweaked a
hamstring.
Oh, shocking.
Surprise.
Yes.
Shocking.
Jay Ajayi is still working with that knee injury.
Although he's allegedly coming back now.
Yes.
He returned this morning.
He returned to practice.
Photographic evidence between printing the pod rundown and coming up here that Ajayi is back on the field.
Although he may not be 100%. I like the way RotoWorld put it in their news blurb here. He realizes he needs to stay healthy or act healthy. He's going to push Arian Foster.
I don't think that's a joke. I really, truly think that has something to do with it. I mean,
look. Sure.
He's seen Arian Foster at practice. He's heard what everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, and this is the cold, hard reality of life in the NFL. You can lose your job at any point, especially when you have an experienced, talented veteran come in. So I do think that there's a little bit of JJ that's like, I got to get back out there. Like, yeah, we laugh about it, but I think there's a lot of truth in that.
I don't disagree. First of all, the team has nothing invested in Jay Ajayi. What is he, a fifth-round draft pick?
By a previous regime.
They've got nothing invested in this guy. So, no, you're 100% right. He's got to get out there. And you're right. I mean, it does sound funny to say, well, you should just act like you're out, but there's got to be a lot of truth to that.
The other thing about this situation that I've seen a couple times now is Adam Gase has come out and said about the backfield, he wants one guy to be out there for all three downs. He doesn't want to have a rotation.
Mm.
So if Foster wins the job,
okay,
they're not going to be like putting Ajayi in on third downs or whatever the case may be. They want a bell cow. They want a workhorse.
Even if Gase wants that, it doesn't quite jive with what he has. right? Because it's not like Jay Ajayi. It's not. I mean, it's clear that they want to work in Arian Foster. I think right. He's saying that mostly because he wants to pump Arian Foster. But how much can this coaching staff? How much can this team really ride Arian Foster? They can't give him 30 carries a game, can they?
Right. As Marcus Grant says, it's good to want things.
You know, I want to get back to this Devontae Parker thing, right? So he's missed the past 4 days of practice with his hamstring injury. And if you follow the beat reporters down there, Miami Herald, et cetera, Kenny Stills running with the first team, and apparently he's doing well.
Leonte Carew ran with the first team in minicamps too.
So there you go. I guess forget about Kenny Stills for a second. We'll still put him in, you know, deep sleeper territory. But Devontae Parker has been a very popular sleeper pick for a lot of people this offseason. I'm starting to cool my jets considerably on Devontae Parker, considering the options that are kind of in that offense.
Welcome to the club. One of my reasons for not being as high on him, I know Harmon, you know, really studied the tape and stuff, and I think his reception numbers weren't great.
He had the second worst success rate versus press coverage in the series' history.
For me, it was also the fact that they still had Stills, Landry's a target hog, and then they went and drafted Carew, who I really like and can be a strong outside receiver for them. I just worried that people were overdrafting Parker on those couple splash plays, and he might not have the volume to sustain that in an offense or make those plays on a regular basis, and you could be coming up with a lot of, you know, ones and twos in your fantasy roster on a week-to-week basis.
All right, Devontae Parker right now going in
probably
seventh round.
Well, I mean, he's on NFL.com, he's going in 13th.
I feel like that whole receiving core beyond Jarvis Landry it's really just pull names out of a hat because we don't really know how this thing's going to shake out.
That's true.
It is truly pulling. So, like, Devontae Parker gets the lead in this one because he was the guy who got the early hype. So he's the guy that, you know, everybody is still on right now. And I honestly don't even know. I like Jarvis Landry. I liked Jarvis Landry last year, and I would certainly take him as like a wide receiver too this year. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I'm staying away. Like, I just don't know. I have no idea.
Can't touch Parker in a single digit round, in my opinion.
So Fantasy Football Calculator, he's going in the 8th round of standard leagues.
10 team.
No, you're right. It's a 12 team because that's what it defaults to. So Devontae Parker going in the he's still going late 8th.
Really, you have him in 8th? I've got him in 7th.
Yeah, right around John Brown and Tyler Lockett. Those three are like
John Brown, Tyler Lockett, right in there. Kevin White going a few picks after.
Parker's ADP has dropped over the last month though.
Yes.
So
okay, well,
I think just to make one quick last point on Parker. I think this is a big deal, him missing off-season practices, because I think that was the thing that started him slow last year.
Absolutely.
Was missing 100%. Time, because my biggest concern with him coming out of college was he only really had one release move against press coverage, and that does not fly at the NFL level. You have to vary your moves off the line of scrimmage, and he did not do that in college. He didn't get the time to work on that as a rookie, and I also don't know if he's kind of hinted before, like in some quotes, like just like he doesn't even know if that's important, which it kind of is. but you know, I think that now he's missing time again. It's not a good sign.
Well, I think maybe he feels like he's a freak athlete, which he's not, but maybe he feels like he is.
He's definitely a big splash play threat. But, you know.
All right, so is Arian Foster, I mean, it sounds like Arian Foster's the starter, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
Have
the veteran back with a lot of great, you know, huge, awesome resumes.
Have we reached the point where if your draft is tomorrow, you need to draft Foster ahead of Ajayi?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
I don't have to like it, though.
No.
You're trying to die on the hill if you do otherwise.
Jay Ajayi going, the 9th round, according to Fantasy Football.
Yeah, he's tumbling now.
He's fallen. From the other day when I said Foster had jumped his ADP, the split is just getting wider now.
Yeah, so. Arian Foster going, oh my gosh, he's going in the 7th.
Yeah.
That's way too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
Just going to have other options if you take him.
Okay, we keep saying this, right? With every running back. Like, oh, that's way too rich. There are no running backs out there. There aren't any running backs out there. And so not everybody is on the let's go wide receiver heavy train. So if you're not doing that, you have to reach for these guys.
Yeah.
You just do because first off, there are only, three actual honest-to-goodness workhorse bell cow guys out there. The rest
I've been here the whole time.
He's not one of them, though.
I know.
He's
sad.
Gone. Sad. But the rest of them are in committee. So you do have to go early to get the guy you think is going to make an impact. You can't sit around and wait and hope some, and then like wait for somebody else to snipe that guy out ahead of you. So maybe you don't like Arian Foster in a single-digit round, but
well,
that's life. That's life right
now. I 100% agree with you, but here's the guys that are going, you know, considerably after him, right? Duke Johnson going a full round after. Frank Gore, I'm not a fan, but whatever. If you like it, fine. Gio Bernard is there. Justin Forsett is there. Danny Woodhead is there. I mean, Danny Woodhead's going two rounds after. These are all guys that I think I'd rather have than Arian Foster, mostly because I'm worried about his age, his health, workload split. Kenyon Drake is still there. I mean, we're ignoring him, obviously.
He got hurt today.
Oh, yeah. Man, really?
So, yeah, he pulled up on a long run or something.
I think it's another hamstring. I believe it's a hamstring.
This tweet comes from Evan Silva yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Zeke, hamstring. Adrian Peterson, hamstring. Le'Veon Bell, suspended. Jamal Charles, PUP. Thomas Rawls, PUP. Deion Lewis, PUP. Forte, hamstring. Ryan Matthews, ankle. Arian, Foster. I guess no more needed to be said. It's almost like investing in running backs is a really opening yourself to a lot of really fragile assets.
Well, but it really, I mean, it does. But the point is, you got to play two.
Yeah.
You got to play two of them.
Yeah.
And there aren't. I mean, good luck finding two that you can feel like that you can actually get. As you feel like you can count on. So at some point, you are going to have to reach on running backs. That's just the way it is.
Yeah,
for sure. Or you punt the position and you become much stronger at all the other more locked, you know, nothing is a
right,
sure
but,
bet.
I mean, but the thing is, how much stronger can you get at wide receiver or tight end? You only play two wide receivers, maybe three. You can only play one tight end. You can only play one quarterback. How much stronger can you really get to the point that it's diminishing returns?
Now, yeah, I mean, that's the debate, but that's why, you know, people are on zero
debating.
Running back.
Yeah.
Terrence West in Baltimore has had a, quote, impressive camp.
No.
That is according to Ravens reporter Jameson Hensley from ESPN.
Why?
And then this is where it gets a little dicey. Hensley then said West is in at least a, quote, in the conversation to start for his hometown Baltimore team. Jameson Hensley does amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
I like Jameson Hensley.
Yep.
He's accurate. He's good with his Baltimore Ravens news. This is ridiculous. He is not in line. No. I refuse to believe it. I absolutely refuse to believe that he is even in consideration.
I feel like we should have some kind of impromptu fantasy therapy here. John Harbaugh, why do you hate us? What did we ever do to you? We drafted the Ravens defense for years, even after they weren't good anymore. We still drafted them on name value. We liked Steve Smith. We want Steve Smith to come back, even though we know he's not the same guy. We even went along with this like, faulty narrative that Joe Flacco is elite, even though he's not, at least not for fantasy.
Oh, he's not.
So how have we been rewarded? We've been rewarded with a wide receiver core that is just a jumbled mess.
Yep.
And now you're throwing Terrence West in our face?
Don't forget the four tight ends.
The four tight ends? Like,
what a mess.
Why?
Four tight ends, 17 running backs.
Like, what did we ever do to you?
What are
the
positions
16,
they
let go of T-Rich.
Oh, yeah.
16.
How do they, I don't understand, where is the other roster spots going? There's so many tight ends and so many running. It's unbelievable.
They're not going to field the defense.
This certainly will be something to watch, but I'm not adjusting Terrence West in draft rankings, nor am I starting to look at him as any sort of, deep sleeper.
Forsett's going to be the
starter. We got to remember, Terrence West was, highly, a lot of people liked him. And in Cleveland, he got kicked off the team for being, a head case.
Right. Yeah.
I figured he was, missing practice. He had a really poor attitude and stuff like that. So,
but, hey, maybe he's got his head on straight now.
Yeah.
In a better organization.
Everybody loves a redemption story, but.
Better organization. It's his hometown. He played college ball out there.
Narrative Street.
And they liked him, too. They were going to take – they said they were going to take him before Cleveland jumped up ahead of them in the third round that year.
I mean, but here's the thing. We've seen him play. No.
Ooh. Hey, he had some decent games.
I mean, he's not terrible, but
I'm open to it. Listen, I'm an idiot, but I'm open to it.
I mean, here's the thing about that I find a little bit more significant about the Terrence West news. Again, I think there's a 0% chance he starts, but I do believe that for someone like Kenneth Dixon, who's missing some time with an MCL, it's clear that Justin Forsett and Buck Allen are running with the ones right now.
Yeah.
Looks like Buck Allen's got that inside track to, I want to say he's got the inside track for the backup job, but I'm starting to read some reports that, man, they are really fighting for that starting position. So we'll see. But for someone like Kenneth Dixon, it's got to drive. I mean, look, there's nobody of a bigger fan than of Kenny Dixon than myself in that offense. But you start seeing the reports, you start looking at the injuries, you start looking at the situation. I mean, you got to drop him down in your rankings. You got to do it. I can't see myself taking him in that, you know, 9th, 10th round range, which is where I've been loving to take him right now. But it's just impossible to say that. If Terrence West is making an impact, and Jameson Hensley is definitely saying that, it sounds like Kenny Dixon is going to be fighting West for almost like, you know, third string duties right now.
Yeah, this, like, I've been thinking about maybe working up a piece on position groups or teams I'm just flat out going to be avoiding in drafts because there's too many question marks. Like, I'd rather take a shot at somebody on the waiver wire. A lot of these, aside from wide receiver, this Baltimore offense is basically one I'm just off of.
Yeah.
Because this is turning into, like, we joked last year about the Patriots backfield being a dice roll, but you can put Dixon's face, Forsett's face, Allen's face, West's face, you know, Kyle Juszczyk's face on a die, roll it any given week, and that's the one you want to start from the look of this right now.
You're right. I still have high hopes for Kenneth Dixon, but this news makes it tough.
Might not be this year.
You're right. All right. How about Christian Michael?
How about him?
Speaking of guys that we've been talking about, you talk about Terrence West and being a head case and never working.
Yes.
Here we are again.
Now we turn the page to Christian Michael.
Pete Carroll in Seattle says what? He's been on the money?
Yep.
In camp so far? Okay. I don't know what to make of it.
I mean,
franchise, you want to take this one?
With the injuries there, it's clearly a camp battle. Rawls isn't back yet, although no. Pete Carroll says he's close. He's been close for the last month. Procise is out with a hamstring, I think, for at least a week or two.
Even if he's not, let's just say he's out with a hamstring.
Yeah.
Because that's just the narrative.
He's got a hamstring.
Okay.
And Michael is kind of the clubhouse leader right now to start. If Rawls can't get back, Michael's leading the pack, and they're saying it's not close. And, I mean, it's kind of a surprise, but if most of his struggles to get on the field and get snaps thus far in his career have been mental, and maybe he's coming around in that aspect, then maybe he's taking it more seriously and we're overlooking him in fantasy right now.
You know, the mental side of it's a good point, because that's something that even coming out of the organization in Seattle late last year after they brought him back was something like, I remember reading reports of, like, he's changed, he gets it now, like, he's kind of bought into the team philosophy, he's working harder in practice and stuff like that, so maybe we've been ignoring these tea leaves that have been sitting right in front of us this whole time.
At the end of the year, when no one was paying attention in week 17, he ran 17 times for 102 yards against Arizona.
It's pretty good.
Does this mean something about Thomas Rawls?
I mean, it could.
Does this mean that Rawls is further away than we even know? I mean, they've been very vague about his return.
I think Pete Carroll is a king of smoke screens, first of all.
But he does. I mean, the
but
problem
he's so
is
good at it.
Yeah, I know. He's so good at it. And here's the other thing, because every now and again, these things that we're saying are smoke screens, they end up being the
truth.
Right thing. You know what I mean? So, because there's no organization that embraces competition more than the Seattle Seahawks.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, Richard Sherman, a fifth-round guy. Thomas Rawls, undrafted, I think. You know, so, again, this is something that's very interesting because I guess it's feasible that Christian Michael could be the starter for Seattle. It's feasible.
And Pete Carroll's usually overly optimistic about injuries or which is basically anything, and he's just never been optimistic about this Rawls thing, which is a little frightening.
It's a fractured ankle. I mean, you know, I didn't understand when fantasy analysts were just writing it off and saying, oh, he'll be back. Right. Like, I don't get it. It happened so late in the season.
Well, because it's sort of like, you know, in video games, when the season's over, the next season, the injured players just all come back.
Oh, right, at 100%.
Right.
They're good.
They're all good again. Yeah.
Except for when they straight up, like, did you ever, when like playing Madden growing up, ever get, like, a career-ending
injury?
I remember I had a fantasy franchise on Madden where I had Steven Jackson and he got a career-ending injury, and I just remember being like, damn.
Must be serious.
Stuff got real.
Yeah. And I'm like, I can't cancel?
I mean,
like, what the hell?
If it's in the game, it's in the game.
Right.
That's right.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, Cameron Bright is a starting tight end in Tampa Bay.
So we're going to do this dance again, huh?
Right. Austin Farian Jenkins
we're doing
is
this dance
out.
Again.
I wonder – A lot of folks are wondering whether ASJ even makes the team.
Is that the Bray train?
This is
the Bray train.
There it goes. Ooh, there it goes. Yeah.
Oh, God.
We converted franchise yesterday.
Nope. Stop.
He was skeptical. Then he started grinding that tape.
There's actually a photo of me grinding tape.
Yes, it's on my Twitter feed.
Stop it.
Honestly was by the end of the day.
Cameron Brait made some good catches last year.
I'm not saying he's
got ability. He's got ability. And listen, the thing about Austin Seferian Jenkins, when he's not hurt, he's playing below his potential or yelling at fans on Twitter. So right.
No, ASJ's done.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to what is the ceiling for a guy like Cameron Brait?
Look, like, they don't have a lot of options in that offense.
They don't. After, you know, Vincent Jackson's getting up there. We've talked about liking him, you know, on last week's episode. Evans,
I mean,
do
they not? Charles Sims, Doug Martin, Mike Evans.
Cameron
Brait. Okay, but that's why. But that's a lot of touches going somewhere else, though.
Still, the tight end's going to have a designated role. As we've mentioned, it's a role that's gotten a lot of targets in dirt cutter offenses. Harmon mentioned last podcast, too. Jameis Winston loves to pummel his tight ends with targets.
He does. He loves
it. If this offense is taking another step with a slim down, you know, progressing Winston.
Okay.
Brait could be a huge beneficiary, and I think his ceiling is like as a back end tight end one, not like, you know, not a Barnkowski getting up there and finishing as the tight end two, but like that Travis Kelce area where he finishes as like the tight end 7 or 8 with, you know, like 800 yards and 5 or 6 touchdowns.
So I come back to my original question from Tuesday.
Yes.
Are you drafting?
Yeah, we get it. We're probably not drafting him because of all of the players that you listed ahead of him, unless he really picks up steam in the preseason.
Right. Yeah.
If you play in a standard 15-round draft, you're probably not drafting him.
Yeah.
But if you play in MFL 10s, I've taken him the back half of some of those several times.
Ooh, that's
especially in
that's spicy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Like, especially because you probably want to take 3 tight ends in that format, but that's a whole other discussion. You also, like, if you're playing DFS during the early parts of the season,
okay,
it's probably going to
be
a cheaper guy.
Clive Walford or Cameron Brait?
Cameron Brait.
Wow.
Walford. I'll go Walford.
Brait. Cameron Brait right now. You know, you guys are making him. Cameron Brait right now. You guys are talking about him like he's White Castle, right?
Because people
love White Castle, right? But everybody who loves White Castle has all these disclaimers about why they love White Castle.
That's
it's
true.
Great when it's 2:30 in the morning and I've drank 37 beers. Like
37.
Like it comes with all these
just
like
Wade Boggs' review. Like White Castle. Like what the heck?
Like. I'm sure Cameron Brait's going to be fine, but like we have to put all these like conditions about when and why and how you draft him. Like he's for most of us, he's a waiver wire
guy.
Yeah.
Any player we put conditions on when and where and why to draft him.
No, not like this.
Dare you slander him?
Not like
White Castle.
He didn't have as many touchdown receptions as Mike Evans did last year.
Wow.
Did it happen?
It happened. I've looked at the numbers.
Oh, you've looked at the numbers. Okay.
All right.
That's good. That's
let's get out of the news here quick. We got to go to Tennessee.
Okay. Tennessee, Kendall Wright, put on blast by Mike Mularkey.
Cool.
For an injury.
Whatever.
Just avoid the Tennessee wide receiver.
So, basically, Mike Mularkey hates all of his wide receivers that could actually be good.
There's going to be – I think I read the –
Tajay Sharpe is getting good.
Maybe I'm making this up, but I think they're going to run a new promotion in Tennessee where everybody gets to play wide receiver for a day.
Good. Perfect.
Just, you know, you win a drawing.
All right.
Put on some pads and run a route.
You must be this tall.
I mentioned that piece I was thinking about writing on position groups or teams I'm going to avoid. The Titans almost – like, there are a lot of good players on this offense, but – all of the stuff coming out of camp and the news and the coach speak and everything and how crowded their position groups are is it's just like I feel like I'm just wasting a draft pick if it's in the middle rounds if I take one of these skill position players because everything's so muddled.
Mariota's never Titans.
Mariota is still a really good, really interesting late round flyer at fantasy quarterback. He's got the wheels.
Yeah.
We saw what he could do last year. What was it? Week 1, 4 touchdowns.
Yep.
You like it,
right?
I like him as a sleeper. I like him, you know,
100%
as a late round guy.
100%. Why?
You know, if Alex Smith is the gap, Teddy Bridgewater is Old Navy, and Marcus Mariota has the chance to be Banana Republic.
Yeah,
you like that?
I do like that. I like it a lot.
I don't shop at any of those.
Sheesh.
By the way, you can sign up today. NFL.com/fantasy. Sign up your team. Sign up your league. The Fantasy Spotlight Show. Inside Train Camp Live, Fantasy Spotlight, today at 2 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. And really, going on for, what?
Another week or so,
another
right?
week. I believe, 2 p.m. Eastern every single day. People ask me, hey, is Fantasy Live back? It's like, yeah, we've kind of rebranded it as Inside Training Camp Live Fantasy Spotlight.
Everything gets rebranded for Inside Training Camp.
It does.
Nothing's the same.
Hey, we're in Hollywood, man. Reboots and rebranding.
Right.
There you go.
And then, of course, NFL.com/draftkit.
To get all the fancy content, we're talking about sleepers, we're talking about busts, we're talking about
mock drafts, rankings,
everything.
Profiles, projections, everything.
Everything. IDP.
IDP.
Everything.
I will. You know what? We will have an IDP preview coming. So for
Marcus
all of you out there, for all of you out there who play,
because he loves you.
I do. You know, you guys are a very vocal, loyal group, and I appreciate you. So I will. You know.
All right. Let's talk about the AFC West.
Let's get into this.
All right, Denver Broncos. Are you worried about Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders, given that the quarterback situation there is? I don't want to say it's a mess. It's jumbled.
Jumbled.
But it's not a mess.
No.
I feel like it's a little bit of a mess.
It's not.
Really?
I don't think so. I know, first of all, I'm no Mark Sanchez lover, okay? But Gary Kubiak has done such a great job developing quarterbacks. And I'm actually not that worried about the wide receiving group.
I'm not either, but I still think that the quarterback position could be terrible. I don't think it will affect the wide receivers as much. My friend Sully Sparks on Twitter, don't follow him, but he tweeted me today. He said, it's August 5th, 2016 of the year of our Lord, and everyone in Denver just realized that Mark Sanchez isn't good at football. you know, I don't know. I think that it could certainly be a thing where he plays well enough, but it doesn't matter to me with the wide receivers because they're just going to, you know, I talk about target share all the time, and these two guys are going to dominate the load there. There's really nobody to catch passes.
It's a concentrated offense, which is an expression you used before, where it goes to those two and almost nobody else.
Last year, Demaryius Thomas, 29% of the targets, Emmanuel Sanders, 23%, and 2014, same thing, even with Wes Welker and Julius Thomas there, 31% for DT and 23% for Emmanuel Sanders.
I mean, I also think, you know, the way what we have seen out of this offense is, you know, hey, maybe bubble screens galore for Demaryius Thomas this year, which, you know, certainly ups his PPR value. And look, he's a playmaker. I'm kind of with Harmon. It's a situation where the quarterback doesn't necessarily have to play well for the wide receivers.
They didn't last year, and both of them prospered. Like, Peyton Manning was atrocious for much of the year, and then Brock Osweiler was like Mark Sanchez level for the rest of the year, and both of these guys still had solid numbers. I'm starting to come around more and more to Emmanuel Sanders, actually, because he's going four rounds or so later than DT. And there have been a lot of reports out of camp, actually, that Demaryius Thomas has been having a lot of drops again, as he did last year. And I don't want to overstate those, but
he is wont to do that.
He is wont to do that, and Sanders is a pretty sure-handed guy that will have no problem eating up those extra targets if, you know, they start turning away from DT a little bit from his crazy volume that he's had.
You know, it's interesting, too. I felt like Demaryius Thomas was a little bit undervalued, or I don't know, it was weird. Like, I felt like the fantasy community was mad at DT for some reason last year. And all he did was catch 105 balls, 1,300 yards, 6 touchdowns. Like, it was not, you know, the DT from 2 or 3 years ago, I get it. But 105, 1,306, that's pretty dang good, man.
Yeah, that's good.
He's wide receiver 11 in PPR last year, which is why I hate analysis. It's like, well, you know, he's not going to, you know, DT could be a bust because he's not going to do what he did 2 years ago. But, like, no kidding. No, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
That's why he's priced in the third round
right now.
And same thing with Sanders. Like, they were both top 20 wide receivers in PPR last year. They probably will be again.
76 catches, 1,100 yards for Emmanuel Sanders to go along with 6 touchdowns. Again, the touchdowns, I get it. There's a little bit of a cap there because they're going to run the ball a lot and they want to protect the ball. That's the thing. They want to protect the ball because when you've got a strong defense like the Denver Broncos have, you cannot turn it over. That's the killer.
And Mark Sanchez is one to throw interceptions.
Do that as well.
So speaking of that ground control, CJ Anderson, are we underrating him too much still?
Not me.
No. Look, I think he's appropriately valued. Look, he's burned us twice now.
Yeah, fool me twice. Not gonna fool me again.
Right, in the early part of the season, right? Now, okay, we always get enticed by his late season surge. Okay. I mean, you know, again, I think he's appropriately priced. I just don't see him, again, being that bell cow guy who's going to carry you to you know, glory in the first half of the season again. I just don't see it.
He was definitely hurt last year at the early part
ankle
of the season.
Ankle and toe.
That's true.
But that is also part of the equation, that we are certainly getting into the point of CJ Anderson's career where there's always something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his range of outcomes is really good because I think he's priced probably at his floor right now in the late third round, but I think he's got a higher ceiling than that.
Okay, I agree.
What is this always something? This is his fourth year in the league. Mm-hmm. The last 2 years he's played 15 games.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, but he nurses injuries a lot.
But he's on the field.
I love that
about
him.
And he's not producing at
times. That's not always good.
I mean, he's on. I believe.
No, me too.
I believe.
Listen,
I believe.
I'm with you too, but I mean, at the same time, there's it is a little bit of like, and it's an always something thing.
And in the fourth round, a fourth round asking price potentially.
Oh, swish.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big value there.
Why are we hating?
Oh, I'm not hating.
All I hear is hate.
The other thing is if the quarterback play isn't grand, like that could hurt Anderson's
touchdown
volume.
Actually, yeah.
So, you know, that's something to think about. Like the offense could just be bad.
All right. How about the Raiders? Derek Carr set to make a giant leap or nah?
Giant leap? Nah. But leap. Yeah.
Okay, so what are we talking? Like 32-ish? 33, 35?
What did he throw last year? 30?
20?
25?
He was a quarterback 15 last
year. I don't think he cracked 30.
No.
No, but I think he was, what you said, quarterback 15 last year. I mean, I think
he... Oh, he did throw 32 touchdowns.
I think he knocks on the door of the top 10. I don't know if he quite gets in, but I think he's knocking on the door.
Yeah, I'd say his ceiling is like number 10 in my eyes.
Right, I mean, I think that's his absolute ceiling.
How this team has been reformed this offseason with such a better defense and stuff. Like, I don't think Carr's going to need to get in as many shootouts, and I don't think they want him to. I think I don't know what happened
that's
with him.
Point.
I don't know what happened with him so much, if it was an arm thing or fatigue or because Cooper was hurt, but he fell off a lot last year down the stretch.
Yeah, he did.
And I think they would rather have Carr not be a game manager. It sounds like such a damning statement, but it's really not. But they don't want, you know, they know they can win with his arm, but they don't want to have to.
That's true.
Is what it seems like the way this team has been going this offseason.
So what you're saying about Derek Carr, though, that's got to have, obviously, a big-time impact on somebody like Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. So do you knock their value down a bit?
I don't think it's a huge knock because, like the Broncos, this is a pretty concentrated offense through
those
two guys.
Right, right.
I mean, I think I've said on this podcast before, I wasn't 100% in on Amari Cooper as like an early or mid-second-round pick. I'd rather take him a little later. And same with Crabtree. He's a guy I'll grab in that, like, I don't know, fifth to seventh round range, depending on the makeup of my team. But I think they've got safe floors, but their ceilings are a little lower than some might expect based on how they jumped last year.
Yeah, I think so too. And in order for Amari Cooper, I just wrote a kind of a debate myself piece, which is weird, about Mike Evans and Amari Cooper in the late second round yesterday.
It's a good piece. You should read it.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
It's on NFL.com/Harmon, everybody.
It's nice.
It's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just all right.
Great. Marcus is one that edited it, too. It really makes me feel bad. But anyways, in order for him to pay off his draft price, he's going to have to be used more in the red zone. He was only targeted 7 times in the red zone. That was behind Seth Roberts and Michael Crabtree.
Wow.
And he received exactly 0 targets inside the 10-yard line, which is weird.
That is so weird.
7 targets the whole season in the red zone?
Yeah, in the red zone.
Wow. And none within 10 yards?
Not a single one.
That makes no sense.
Looking at some of the other numbers of the that I accumulated in that piece, like one of his weakest points as a pro, we know, you know, look at his perception, he separates all over the route tree, you know, deep, short, all that sort of stuff, but he's not that great at contested catches. 61.5% conversion, that's below the NFL average, so maybe it's just that's really not the strength of his game is in traffic, but he's going to have to score more than, he's going to have to be like an 8 to 10 touchdown guy to pay off that price, and I just don't know if he can get to that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What about
simultaneous? Interesting.
Yeah, how about Latavius Murray though?
He was
the RB10 last year.
I mean,
obviously the position group died
last
year, so there's a little bit of that. And quite frankly, when you watched him play, it was not spectacular.
He had 200-yard rushing games the entire season. 200 and
touchdowns were also a problem.
Yeah, six double-digit fantasy outings and all. All those are all games that he scored touchdowns in. So he's touchdown dependent to get to that double digit notch, at least last year.
And for a large part of that season, if I can spit this out here, he just wasn't. I don't know. He just wasn't that explosive athlete that we've seen,
and we know
his measurables are unbelievable.
Yeah, he's
a beast.
They're
unbelievable. He's an unbelievable athlete, but it seemed like he was preserving himself a little bit last year.
And he got worn down. He had one of the highest percentages of like offensive touches and opportunities that flowed through him. It was like him and Frank Gore saw like 75-ish percent of the offensive touches, like carries and targets, go through them, which is just obscene.
Yeah.
Or like the running back opportunities, excuse me. So I think that's why he wore down, which is why they've talked about bringing in DeAndre Washington and helping to lessen his load, which should in turn could make him more effective. Like,
I agree.
Bring back those explosive plays that were missing last year.
Right.
Talking about that effectiveness, if you're drinking something right now, finish it because you're going to spit it out when you hear this. This is one of the more disgusting stats I've seen of the offseason. This comes from Scott Barrett, who's a writer from Pro Football Focus at Scott Barrett DFB on Twitter. Since 2001, of the 92 cases of running backs amassing 260 carries and 35 receptions in a season, Latavius Murray's 2015 ranks dead last in fantasy points scored.
Yeah, he just wasn't. Ceiling was like not
tons
good.
Of volume, but not good.
Which
did not
so
play
weird.
Well.
He also had 8 games with 2 or fewer receptions and had just 232 receiving yards for the season, which ranked him outside the top 30 in receiving yards among.
I think his yards per target was like the lowest of any running back last year too, with like 40 plus targets. But where he's priced this year, I'm totally cool with getting in on it because even if he just gets the volume, then he's a safe. Ish RB2 floor guy. If he becomes more effective and gets those splash plays back, then boom.
Agree.
He's returned more on my investment than I expected.
And we expect this defense to improve, right?
Yes.
Right.
They have a ton of really good players that they added this offseason. Reports out of minicamp, I saw somebody tweeted yesterday, like, nobody's getting open. Nobody's running through this defense. It's just could be lights out. And if that's the case, game scripts will flip and there will be just more opportunity.
They brought in Sean Smith, who was a great pro from Kansas City. They brought in Bruce Irvin, a great pass rusher. They brought in Reggie Nelson, who's turned into a really strong safety with the Bengals.
They still got
Mac. They drafted they didn't take Neal. They took the other one. They drafted another safety too, who's his name's escaping me right now. He's very good. So that, and their defense, you just mentioned, they already had Khalil Mack. They've got Malcolm Smith, the Super Bowl MVP from the Broncos-Seahawks game, has actually turned into a solid pro for them there. There's a lot to like on this defense, so that could flip the game scripts for them, and that would in turn be good for Murray.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. Like, you know, at first I was super excited about Derek Carr. You know, you look at the arm talent and everything and think, oh, this guy could be set to make a huge leap. But then, man, I don't know. I think he'll play better from a real-life perspective, but from a fantasy perspective, I'm kind of anticipating the numbers that we saw last year.
He's entering Mark Brunell territory where he's going to be a very good quarterback, but he's not going to be an elite fantasy quarterback.
I could see low 30s-ish touchdowns. I don't think he's going to crack 4,500 yards. I don't think he's going to get there. I think the numbers we saw last year could be basically what we see.
Ceiling, huh?
I think that's basically what we could see this year, given how good that defense will be. And for a large part, that's why I'm kind of, you know, a little iffy on Amari Cooper and a little bit higher on Latavius Murray. But we'll see. How about the Kansas City Chiefs? Alex Smith. Wait. I'm sorry. He was the top 5.
This was a joke because we had our projections get outsourced, and they first came in, we had to do some fine tuning because they had Alex Smith projected as a top 5.
You're so polite.
Womp womp.
You're so polite. Alex Smith is not going to be a top 5 quarterback. Come on out.
It's a good Midwestern values.
Yep.
Yes, he's so
that's
polite.
That's how I'm raised. But Alex Smith, I mean, he's a great streaming option. They call him Jesus Smith on Living the Stream. because if you do stream the position, he can be a great one to come in and give you a safe floor because he can run and stuff. But don't touch him otherwise in league.
I feel so frustrated by Alex Smith all the time because, like, you know, you talk about a good streaming option because he does have a couple pop fantasy games. But it's so hard to predict those games.
Yeah.
Because sometimes in good matchups, he doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in bad matchups, he puts up a 30 spot. So, I don't know, man. He's generally a guy I don't think I've ever touched on the waiver wire because it's so hard to predict what he's going to do. But, whatever. If you're into it, go for it. How about Jamaal Charles? Right now going, what, in the late second round? Anywhere between the mid-second to early third round. A lot of respect being paid to Jamaal Charles, despite the fact that he's had 2 ACL surgeries in the past 5 years. Again, the only running back that has had a 5-yard per carry average. How do I want to phrase this? What's the proper way? Whatever, he's good.
No, he's so to help contextualize it, because I tweeted out these things from our NFL media research packet, and they caught mini fire when I did. Among running backs with at least 1,000 attempts in NFL history, Jamaal Charles has the highest yards per attempt at 5.5, above Jim Brown, Hall of Fame, Joe Perry, Hall of Fame, Gil Sayers, Hall of Fame, Barry Sanders, Hall of Fame,
right,
and Adrian Peterson, soon to be in the Hall of Fame.
He's ridiculous.
And seasons averaging 5-plus yards per attempt. He is first in NFL history as well with 7 in his career. Brown only had 5. Sanders only had 5. Walter Payton and Emmitt Smith each had 1.
Okay, but the question is, 2 ACL surgeries in the last 5 years. They've got 2, I don't want to say, you know, great running backs, but they've got Charkandrick, Wes, Spencer Ware in the backfield that were effective at times last year. I thought Spencer Ware was very effective last year. You got to think Andy Reid is going to mix them in a little, maybe not. I don't know.
That to me is kind of the big question. Like, I like Jamaal Charles. You know, I wouldn't mind taking him somewhere in the second round if I could. But I don't know what to do after that. Like, where is it? Is it? Because if I take Jamaal Charles, I feel like I need to handcuff him. But is it West? Is it Ware?
I think it's Ware. From pretty much every report out of there, he's been the backup. He also is the better red zone threat, which could harm Charles a little bit. But I think he's priced with that in MVP already.
I'm not afraid of taking Charles. We saw how hard he worked to come back from his last ACL. There's no doubt he won't be doing the same thing now, especially after he saw these other guys perform and get. But everybody talks about the contracts they got. They each got a 2-year, small money deal.
Yeah,
it's not like they threw C.J. Anderson money at Kendrick West to stay.
Right.
So I think Charles is still going to be the guy, and even if his production dips a little bit, franchise had that stat where, he still is averaging a crazy amount of points on minimal touches.
13.2 touches a game or something through his career, and he's, when he finishes a full season, he's an elite fantasy running back on that low volume.
Yeah, he's
but
awesome.
The concern now, they expected him to be ready at the start of training camp, and I don't think he's practiced yet, so... Mm. That's raising some red flags, but it's not like he needs the reps because he knows what's going on.
All right, so there's Jeremy Maclin, there's Travis Kelce, who I'm not touching because of the reality show. Not doing it.
Add him to the hate list.
the wheel of hate, man.
I don't know. Where do you take Maclin? Is there? I mean, I know the fantasy stronghold is big on the bird alert.
He had a little bit of an issue the other day at practice. Was it a hamstring, I believe, for the bird alert?
You know what? Let's just call it a hamstring.
Probably was a hamstring.
It was a hamstring.
Let's call it a hamstring.
From now on, every injury is a hamstring.
Yep, everything's a hamstring.
So I think Jeremy Maclin's a little underrated this year.
I agree.
Yep.
He's going off the top of the board in the 5th round. And I think it's just the stink of the Kansas City passing game, which, there could be a little bit of a shift this year because Justin Houston, who, by the way, one of the best defensive players in the NFL, so might make a difference when he's not on the field. He might miss at least the first half of the season with an ACL injury, right? I think it's an ACL. But, during the 2013 season, in the games where Houston did not play, Alex Smith averaged almost a full 20 yards per game more passing in those games. And Maclin owns just, again, back to target share, a dominant percent of the team's passing targets. He owned 29% last year. That's up there with the elite wide receivers in the NFL. And while there's not a ton of volume last year in Kansas City to assume, that could change this year.
Yeah. And 20 yards per game might seem small, but over the course of a year, that's not insignificant most of those yards are being funneled to the number one option like Maclin. So I think, Francis, we've talked about it on this podcast before, and I forget if you were here for that one or not, Harmon, but I know we're both in on Maclin in those mid-round range. And
Definitely. He's super value pick in, round 5.
I think he's got a safe floor, and his ceiling. It wouldn't surprise me if he finished as a wide receiver 1 this year.
Yeah. Plus, he's just so darn good.
He's good.
He's hashtag good at football.
He's just good at football. I mean, that's the thing. I don't mind picking him just because the talent level, man, is there. All right, let's talk about the Chargers. I think they're going to be an absolute train wreck next year.
Really?
From a win-loss perspective.
Oh, okay.
from a win-loss perspective?
Who cares about that?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, they're going
to
be
I'm not here to talk about real football.
They're going to be a mess, man. Phillip Rivers, he has been, I want to say he's been pretty darn reliable.
He has.
You kind of sort of know what you're going to get with Phillip
Rivers. Always underrated.
He's a great late-round quarterback value. It's so funny, too, because he's always there whenever I'm, looking to draft a quarterback. And I'm guilty of this, too. I always not take him.
You don't take him? Why?
I don't know. And every single time I pass on him, I'm like, I probably should have taken Phillip Rivers.
I kind of do the same thing. Now that you mention it, I'm always like, well, I can get Eli Manning. Like, I should have taken Phillip.
Right, exactly. Or it's like, oh, I take Marcus Mariota. I'm like, probably should have just taken Phillip Rivers right there.
Like, I think we get so so obsessed with these guys Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston or Derek Carr, young guys, and then every once in a while you get a Blake Bortles out of that, then you get a top 5 quarterback. But Phillip Rivers is always there, man.
I love Phillip Rivers. The last time he had Ken Wisenhunt there, he had one of his best seasons. He completed almost 70% of his passes, 32 touchdowns, 4,400 yards. He's a guy who has a career touchdown rate of 5.3%, so it hasn't fluctuated a ton.
Yeah.
He's got Keenan Allen there. He's got Travis Benjamin now.
Yeah.
I mean, Stevie Johnson injury hurts a little bit, but he's got weapons. He's got the offensive coordinator back. The defense is still a bit of a work in progress. I love Phillip Rivers is like my favorite late-round quarterback to get.
You know, to your point, Alex, now that you mention it, the more I start thinking about it, the more I get excited, right? Because, like, again, I do believe it's going to be a train wreck in terms of the win-loss. And you're right. I think they're going to be involved in a few more shootouts.
Right.
And with Travis, here's the thing about that offense that was really lacking. And what Phillip Rivers.
Healthy players?
Healthy players.
That's a big one.
That was a big one. But I thought the offense looked so much better when Malcolm Floyd could actually get downfield.
Yeah.
And when they didn't have that downfield guy. And Phillip Rivers loves to go downfield, by the way. So it's like when they didn't have that option. I think it really hurt him. And having Travis Benjamin, who is one of those elite downfield speed guys, I think it's going to open up the offense a lot.
Yeah, that matters a lot. I wrote a piece about the Chargers receiving core last week, and then Stevie Johnson proceeded to get hurt. Whoops.
Whoops. Yeah.
It seems to be happening a lot lately.
Yep. Stop writing about players.
I should probably, but then you guys stop paying me, so I can't really have that. But anyways,
right.
That deep threat is super important to the Chargers offense because the way Keenan Allen plays the game, the way that Phillip Rivers is a really
Antonio Gates
anticipatory passer. Yeah, they have a ton of short to intermediate threats, and
yeah.
They are great at that, but they need that lid popper too. And like you mentioned, he is – Travis Benjamin, that is a great deep threat. His 65% success rate on go routes is one of the top five scores that I've ever had. So he's a really, really good player.
I mean, dude was hooking up with Johnny Manziel on deep balls last year.
Exactly.
Like now he's got the Baron of the Bolo tie throwing him the ball. I'm excited.
Upgrade.
Let's talk about the running backs a little bit,
right.
Though, because I know, franchise, you're
do we have to?
Either you're driving the hype train on Melvin Gordon, or it's like you and Brad Evans are in the caboose together.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
no, I jump. Like, I'm there, too. Like, I'm at least riding shotgun, if nothing else.
You guys are like the Flintstones cars where they're paddling with their feet.
Yep.
Look, last time Ken Wisenhunt was in San Diego in 2013, okay. Ryan Matthews, 285 rush attempts, 1,255 rush yards.
It's pretty good.
What was their record that year?
That year, what was what?
9-7.
Okay.
That year, Danny Woodhead also had over 1,000 total yards and I think 8 total touchdowns. So we're talking about the running back split.
Interesting.
That, you know, both backs had over 1,000 yards and a handful of touchdowns. So
what was Danny Woodhead's injury?
I think it was like some kind of broken leg.
Ankle. I think it was.
2014? Yeah, it was ankle, I think it was.
Ankle.
Oof.
But he came back great last year.
He did.
He did.
So
I think both of these guys can have value, and I think they're both kind of priced appropriately in the, like, I don't know, fifth to eighth round range, depending on your league and where they fall. I mean, franchise, you took Melvin Gordon in our fourth round of our Big 12 team mock recently.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a
reach,
I guess.
You guys can find at NFL.com/fantasy mock drafts, right? Is what we set that up as?
Yes.
Fantasy mock drafts,
with
plural,
an S.
With an S.
His ADP's been on the rise over the last month. He's still going, like, beginning of the sixth round in 12-team league. So that's a bargain.
I mean, I would say the fear about Danny Woodhead, and you know how we all feel in the stronghold about Danny Woodhead.
Goat,
love him.
Goat. Is that if,
second goat to Burt Will?
If people stay, if you know Keenan Allen stays healthy, if Travis Benjamin's there all year, you know if Antonio Gates has something even close to what he did last season,
yeah,
those targets are going to be cut significantly for Woodhead. I mean, he led the team in targets by a long way, but mostly because Phillip Rivers didn't have anybody else to throw the football to.
Yeah, everybody
was
hurt.
Did he lead the team in receiving yards?
I think
he might have.
I think so.
Might have. Now, mind you, Keenan Allen also missed 8 games
and was
second on the team in targets and receiving yards, which says a lot about
says
who they still had there.
And, like, Javonte Hernan and, like, I don't know.
I think you're certainly right, Marcus. We shouldn't expect, like, 106
right.
targets.
Right, I mean, it's just
Woodhead,
I mean, if he has 100 targets, things went terribly wrong for the Chargers.
That's true.
Even if he falls down to, like, the 60-70 range, that's still a great amount of volume for a back like that who's going to get a few carries, he'll catch his passes, and it turns him, like, that's what he was last year. I mean, he way overperformed because of all the injuries, but he was always a safe floor play.
I mean, you could lock him up for 50 receptions, no?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and he's the primary red zone back. In 2013, Ken Wisenhunt's last time there, he handled a whopping 40 red zone touches.
Oof.
You know, not just carries, but also as a receiver.
Yeah.
And he out-touched, Ryan Matthews inside the 10-yard line, too.
Right.
I mean, here's the thing. When you got Phillip Rivers, you're going to give him the ball in the red zone. And Danny Woodhead fits into what they want to do. They're going to give the ball to your best player.
Yeah.
In scoring situations.
I mean, he's that chess, movable chess piece that gives them more mismatches in a short area space like the red zone. Whereas, they don't have a massive receiver, and Gates is old as hell now. And, Keenan Allen's not like, he's not Dez Bryant in the red zone. So that it makes sense why they give Danny Woodhead a lot of touches there. And those are valuable for a player like him who has limited touches.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk Fan League update.
All right, who wants to go first? Who wants to usher the first person in?
I feel like Alex, we should as the OG,
OG
league,
OG. Probably.
You should announce our
so
selfish.
Well, first, we have to remind everybody the leagues are ongoing. You can still submit. Just rate and review the podcast on iTunes or your app or whatever. We will look at them there. It also helps to take a screen grab and tweet it to me so I can favorite them, because that's a quicker way for me to get to them. And sometimes I think that it's a little clunky on iTunes looking at all the reviews, especially because thank you guys for pouring so many in. It's been the response and support has been awesome, and it's fun reading.
Rock.
Fun reading what you guys think, and you're the reason we're here anyways. But all right, so Marcus, we had decided on let's see. Was it the last one I sent you, I think?
I believe it was the last one.
Okay, hold on. Slack, I know it remains nameless on the ATN podcast, but it's just moving a little slowly for me here on my computer. Oh, no.
We don't have those sort of grudges here.
We're going with the game one, correct?
Yes.
Okay, correct. So this review came in from – oh, great. Now I pulled it full screen.
John Wurz.
There we go. Wait, no.
No, I'm sorry.
Eric Koepke.
Wow.
Sorry for the false start.
Okay, Steve Harvey.
Sorry. Wow.
Good thing we let you guys go first.
Wow.
You're actually the runner-up.
That doesn't mean you're out of the running.
Oh. Eric Koepke is at @mmovers on Twitter, I believe. So, rated the podcast one of the most entertaining fantasy podcasts. My wife and I listen to the fantasy football podcast. And while some of the shows may get down to some statistics faster or use a system, these guys make it the most fun. My wife now dislikes all other fantasy podcasts except this one because these guys are just way more entertaining. We appreciate that. Thank you. They give shouts out to our arguments or random things, stuff like March to 1100 and Danger Zone. It says these guys take their job seriously but not themselves. And now,
yeah, buddy.
The reason Eric and maybe his wife, if they want to co-manage the team, are getting into the OG Fan League is because he said that they have, with the show coming out on Tuesdays and Fridays, usually on Fridays they use the show for a little weekend game. And the rules change a bit from week to week depending on hot players and whatnot. But the current rules are one drink, parentheses, of soda, comma, sure.
Of course.
Anytime you hear Fantasy Freaks and Geeks.
Which means they start the show off hot.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Adam Rank appears on the show. I mentioned Green Bay, the Packers, or Wisconsin. James' opinion has switched long-term, as in 2015 you were early QB, now you're late QB. Anyone uses the term stud or freak? Mentioning bad busts from last year, like Abdullah Lacey, anytime someone uses the word suspension,
jeez.
James says, man.
You are going to be on the ground.
Well, that's why
man.
They do that's it on
why
Friday.
And that's why they drink so.
You're going to have a crazy sugar rush.
Two drinks. Anytime Harmon mentions Allen Robinson or someone mentions Harmon and Robinson.
I thought that was aggressive. Two drinks for that?
That's a lot.
You haven't yet today.
Adam Rank mentions professional wrestling. James switches his opinion mid-show. Anyone says tangent or this show went off the rails, so that's me.
Which is usually you.
For that.
Every episode.
Fabiano mentions points against a team specific to a position. Danger Zone and March 1100 are mentioned.
Okay.
Three drinks. James mentions 40 times or other combat.
What?
Gostkowski is mentioned as a draft choice before the 13th round.
Okay.
We comment on the way someone on the show looks, Harmon's beard, Franchise's beard, shirts with ties, etc., or Gronk is mentioned.
Wow.
And then four drinks, anytime anyone, usually Alex, gets excited about Tyrod Taylor because they're Bills fans.
Of course.
So, Bills Mafia goes hard in the paint. But,
God.
All right, so the first entrant then into the OG Fan League for 2016 is Eric Koepke at @mmoverez on Twitter. So hit me up. We'll be reaching out to get your info for the league.
And the reason I like that is that it is clear that dude.
They listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
They wasn't just
solid review.
You know what?
Holy cow.
Everybody else don't tweet in making a game now. But, their review at the top was nice and stuff anyways. But that was just a fun thing. And, for the first one.
But the fact that they were referencing stuff from
way back.
Callbacks.
That
caught your attention. That's the whole point.
They
that is solid.
All right.
All right, Bearded League. Give me a guy.
Harmon's got it.
Harmon's got it.
Yeah,
this comes from iTunes commenter C Allen 625. The subject was love peanut butter.
And you're still rolling with it, huh?
This, like the previous commenter said, you know, we don't take ourselves seriously here. I'm going to get slammed several times in this review, but that's why I like it. It's a good group of guys with great football. Doesn't fill out the screen here. But anyways, wife says facial hair is the woat. So sorry, franchise and boy, young boy, Harmon. That's a Living the Stream throwback. We'll explain that. Look forward to the pod each week as it has a great balance of analytics and banter. Although the true champ of the fantasy stronghold is whoever can keep rank from going off on tangents. Would love to join one of the leagues if possible. Keep it up, fellas.
Nice.
Okay.
You're in the beard league.
See, Alan, even though facial hair is the woat, according to your wife, you're in the beard league.
Yeah.
It's a contrarian play. We'll see if it works out.
It's a contrarian. It's good. I like it. I will name somebody into the Danger Zone League.
Danger Zone!
And keep in mind, we're going 16 teams here, so you're going to have to get some deep knowledge. You're going to have to pick up some Danger Zone players late in the
like
draft.
Like Cameron Brait.
Oh, yeah. Let's get it going. How about at Robbie Steves? The reason he's going to get into the league. Forget about the review. I don't even know what the review is. What's the review? What is it? Five stars?
Don't worry about it.
Great show. Makes you feel like you're there with them. Okay, whatever. The real reason Robbie Steves is getting into the league, he just murdered MS Paint. And he created a wheel that said, who does James Coe hate the most?
We've referred to it as the Wheel of Hate now.
It is the Wheel of Hate. It is just a simple wheel. It's got Eric Decker, Jonathan Stewart, Melvin Gordon, Josh Gordon, Mark Ingram, the Chicago Bears backfield, and Matt Harmon.
Oh.
Matt Harmon, who's an idiot.
Yes.
The fact that you took time to, again, murder MS Paint, kudos to you, man. Kudos to you. Yes, no, absolutely. At Robbie Steves, you're in the Danger Zone League, kid.
Woo!
Nice.
Congratulations.
All right, so, and to everybody, you know, you don't have to come up with something crazy like this. Straight, heartfelt reviews can also make it as well.
Absolutely.
Just keep them coming. And if you tweeted at me and I didn't favorite or anything, just tweet at me again. Like, keep
right.
it going. Mentions are busy sometimes, got other crap going on.
So you have to
stay on it.
Subscribe. You have to rate and review. And again, you don't have to leave five stars. It doesn't make a difference. You can leave a one star. I don't care. If your review is funny, you got a good chance.
Yeah, it can say bruh. Like, James, stop saying bruh. Alex, stop talking about Wisconsin. This podcast sucks.
It's all good, as long as it's funny.
You're not getting in the beard league if you say the podcast sucks. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Hey, well, first of all, if you say the podcast sucks, that's not a great take.
No,
that's not a great
take. It's because it's wrong. Podcast is awesome.
Wrong.
Subscribe. I don't care what you do, but you got to subscribe, you've got to rate, and you've got to review the podcast to be considered for one of those three leagues, the OG, the Beard, or the Danger Zone League. All right, let's do Daily Daps. Get out of here.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the day.
Daps and hugs. Give me daps, because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
Daps.
All right, Daily Dap time. Who should we start with? Should we start with the Magical Beard of Fantasy?
Yeah, I'll go first.
All right, let's go.
Just kind of piggybacking off this whole review the podcast to get in the leagues thing.
Okay.
Made me realize we're getting so much great feedback, and Gelhar already mentioned this, but Daily Daps to all the listeners and our fans around the globe. Because
I know.
We're getting reviews from
like
New
Australia,
Zealand,
New Zealand.
Yeah,
Austria, too.
All over the place. It's really
That's
cool.
Great.
And thanks. And it makes me feel warm inside when you guys have good things to say about us. So daily daps to all our fans and listeners out there. Thank you very much.
Woo. Matthew Harmond.
Yeah, I'm going to dap listeners too, but not to this podcast. But thanks again.
Wow.
I didn't realize Francis
weird turn of events.
Steal the thunder there. But no, to the people that have listened to my podcast, the Backyard Banter podcast, all off season, we will be releasing.
Hey, Charlie plays a part.
Charlie does do something. I don't know what, but
he barks once in a while.
He is there. And looking good, too, by the way. So we're releasing the last episode of the podcast next week. It's been a really fun off-season project. All the guests who have been on there, thank you so much to all the people who have listened. Really appreciate it. I did not expect it to get as much interest as it did, but I'm very happy with it. And so, yeah, thanks.
Good stuff.
Nice.
MG.
And we'll have a season two, too, by the way.
Oh, okay. There you go.
You guys have been so altruistic with your daily daps.
Yeah.
Not me.
Bring it back down.
I'm in a daily dap, I think I've dapped him before. Rick Remender, who is
yes.
currently my favorite comic writer Everything that I've picked up by him has been gold, and a couple recent things that I've read that I really love. He just put out the first volume. I guess it was out a couple months ago of a new one called Tokyo Ghost, which I think is fantastic. I'm also reading the first couple volumes of Low, which is really a departure from a lot of the other things he's done. Generally with his stories, it jumps right into the action and you just go. This one has been more of a slow burn, and so I've been really curious to follow that. So I got through the first two volumes, which has been absolutely amazing. And today, probably after I leave work at some point, I'm going to the store because Volume 4 of Deadly Class came out this week. And of all the things I'm reading, and, you know, reading a lot of good stuff, you know, Alex and I exchange books all the time.
Nerd alert.
Of all the things I'm reading, Deadly Class is hands down, far and away, my favorite. So I have been anticipating Volume 4 of Deadly Class for several, even more than Saga. I love Saga.
That's what I was just about to ask.
I love Saga. Love it a lot. Deadly Class, to me, is next level. So Volume 4 comes out. I was derelict in my duty and did not go on Wednesday when it first came out, so I'm going to go get it today.
Word derelict, by the way.
Appreciate that. And so, yeah.
I don't even know if you used it properly, but it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. So I'm fired up to go in. But on top of that, more than that, is I actually read recently that Deadly Class is being converted into, I believe, an animated series. So I am super, super fired up about that. I love Rick Remender. I'm a huge fan of him. I follow him on Twitter. You know, if you're listening to this, you know, just a little fave.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, that's
Please at me. Marcus Grant.
The Whiz Kid from Wisconsin.
I'm going to do a football-related Daily Dap, and just Daily Daps to the 2016 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, including Brett Favre, who I grew up watching, and Kevin Green, who was a phenomenal player, been on the list for a long time. You know, Tony Dungy, Eddie DeBartolo Jr., the whole class. Like, I was lucky enough to get to go to the Hall of Fame 1 year for this job and cover it from like a fan's perspective. So I got to see that stuff. It's a really cool weekend. And like, if you're a fan and you've always wanted to go, or like somebody from your team is getting inducted, like, go. It's so cool. Canton's a tiny little town in Ohio. You know, they play the Hall of Fame game at like a high school stadium. The Hall of Fame's nestled right there off the freeway. it's just a really cool atmosphere, and it's like this big first sign that, like, man, football is back.
Yes.
Like, guys are getting enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
The first, like, actual pads are clicking in a preseason game.
Yep.
It's a really fun weekend. And so Daily Daps to all the guys that, you know, poured their hearts and souls into football, entertained the hell out of us in our lifetimes, and are getting enshrined in Canton now because of it.
All right. I'm going to get Daily Dap nicknames because, obviously, if you guys listen to the podcast, I come up with a lot of nicknames. So I don't know why. I like doing it. I like Chris Berman.
Yeah, man.
Chris Berman was one of my inspirations to get into this business. He did a lot of nicknames. Thus, I do a lot of nicknames.
Man, I will never forget watching NFL primetime on Sunday nights.
When
I was younger. That was must-see television.
Built my Sunday afternoons around it.
And I know Berman sometimes gets a bad rap these days by some people. And
no.
I'm like, no way. He did so much, and he was so great. Like,
rumbling,
stumbling. Like, anytime Mike Allstott had a touchdown, I loved it.
It was awesome. And that leads into my Daily Dap of Tom Jackson.
Yeah, nice.
Who is stepping away. He was Chris Berman's running mate for a long time, and also one of the guys that I admired growing up. It just, man, they had such a great chemistry, and it was great watching them. And, you know, he was the straight man to Chris Berman's, you know, crazy guy routine, and it was good, man. It was good stuff. Anyways, it kind of inspired me to think about Matt Harmon's followers are scary. And trillions.
The Harmer division. Called.
That's when they get aggressive. Generally, I like to call your followers the Harmonites.
Just rolls off the tongue.
The franchisees.
I'm down with that.
For the franchise.
Yep.
The Wizards.
Works pretty well.
For Alex. We got the MG units.
MG units.
That's pretty sick.
That's pretty good.
Way cool.
I don't really have one for myself.
What are the co-followers?
The cohorts.
No.
That's
pretty good.
The acolytes.
The acolytes. Those are strong. These are strong considerations. Adam Rankin, who I forgot to mention originally, was the Rankin file.
Yep, makes sense.
It's pretty good. I will also anti-Daily Dap the NFL media bathroom.
worth an anti-dap.
What is going on? There is one sink in the NFL media bathroom that just refuses to work. It is the laziest sink in all.
So, as an aside,
the history of sinks.
Every couple weeks it seems to be broken down, and there's always a sign that says sink temporarily out of order. And I want to just take a pen and cross out the temporarily
permanent
and just say always.
How about
fill
just
it with
like
cement?
They should put a sign that says sink temporarily in order.
Right.
Yeah. Right. By the way, I've gone to that sink an embarrassing amount of times and be like, oh yeah, that's right, it doesn't work.
It is. It is so bad. The bathroom situation, I'm not exactly sure what's going on there.
It's the worst place on planet.
The funniest thing, too, is they spent so legitimately like 4 or 5 months redoing this thing, too. We had to always, like, it sounds such a first world problem, but we always had to, like, trek upstairs if we had to go to the bathroom and stuff. But we're like, man, this is going to be great. They spent so much time on this bathroom. It's going to be awesome.
Nope.
No.
No.
Not the case.
By the way, when they were remodeling this thing, and we had to we called it Mordor. When we had to go into that bathroom.
Climb up the mountain.
Climb up to Mount Doom.
The thing is, by 2 p.m., when the entire NFL media...
It smelled like Mountain Doom.
It was a not pleasant. Oh, a not pleasant place. And what a way to end the podcast.
I was going to say, this is what people are tuning in for.
Hey, it's not poetry, at least.
So there you go. For the WizKid from Wisconsin, for the franchise, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. For the wide receiver prognosticator, Matt Harmon. I'm James Coe. We're out.